Jake, welcome back to inarguably the biggest show of all time.
It's a pretty big one. I mean, not as big as our 100th one, but hey.
You know, this is the first. This is like point one. This is a point.
Yeah, this is a good place to start from True Believers.
We have a living legend on the show.
He is alive.
Oh, my God. You can't do this to me.
He's been on a few times. You know, he's known for, he's doing a little book called Ultimates. You know, Ultimate Comics Ultimates. He's a big star. Our Love is Real. You heard of this thing? You heard of that?
I have heard of it quite a few times.
Sacrifice.
Whoa.
Uncanny Whoa. X-Force.
You're blowing me away. I'm like, it's like a Maxwell tape commercial right now. I'm blown away in my seat.
Uncanny X-Force number one is out today, and we have the writer, Sam Humphries. Welcome back.
Yes, guys. Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it. This can't be your second biggest show. There are bigger ones in my heart, for sure.
The downloads are already through the roof, and it's not even posted yet.
Yeah.
We have, like, pre-order downloads. So
pre-order podcast.
You're taking over Uncanny X-Force. You said, and I quote, "I'm going to write it like I stole it," end quote.
That's right. That's right.
So I read the first issue, and I'm excited because it seems like it's going to have a Psylocke focus, and she is just really pissed off in this issue. What is happening right now?
She is pissed off, and I can't really say why without spoiling. You start to get an idea of why Betsy is so pissed off on the last page of issue one. It's a pretty big spoiler, which I won't reveal here, but suffice to say, the last issue of Rick's run is 6 months before the first issue of my run. So there's six issues in between, and a lot can happen in six issues, especially if you live the high-octane soap opera lifestyle of a mutant in the Marvel Universe. So we're going to, you know, when we see our characters, like, things have changed, things have shifted a bit. Psylocke is pissed, and we're going to have a lot of fun slowly filling in the gaps on what's been going on with these characters.
I have a question about Psylocke, and I really was having a hard time figuring this out towards the end of Uncanny, of Remender's run. So I wonder if you can answer this. Does Psylocke still not have the ability to feel sorrow?
I'm not sure exactly how that. I believe she got that back. She got that back during Remender's run, didn't she?
Well, it got taken away during that storyline where they're in Otherworld. She like gives it up so that she can save Phantom X.
I'm pretty sure she got that back at the end of the run.
How did she get it back? She just kind of had it.
Sam's going to reveal it to us this year, probably.
Okay, Sam, yeah, you better write that in. Yeah, I want to know. This better be part of that flashback.
I'll let Wikipedia figure that out.
Dude, you don't even know.
As far as I'm concerned, Betsy's got her groove back.
If you don't name a storyline how Betsy got her groove back, this podcast will never go up.
I looked at when I was paging through and I finished issue one, I looked at her Wikipedia page and it is massive. It's longer than most, you know, presidential listings.
It's really long. It's really confusing. There are certain things in there that I just don't even want to get into or approach or touch, you know? I mean, to me, you know, the continuity is important, and I definitely do my best to not invalidate what has gone before. But, you know, the things to me that are important are who she is as a character. And Betsy is a survivor. She's not just survived many traumatic things in her life as a fictional character in the Marvel Universe, but as a character in comics, she has survived so many phases and so many fads and so many different creators taking her in different directions. And that's why I think it's high time for Betsy to step up, not just in the mutant world, but in the Marvel Universe, and take that center stage, take that spotlight. And that's what we're going to do here in Uncanny X-Force.
You're listening to too much Beyonce right now.
This is her time.
Speaking of survivors, Storm. You know, it set the internet aflame when it was shown that she had her mohawk back. # Mohawk Storm. But so I'm, you know, this is a big moment for, I'm a big Storm fan, and really, I don't think she's ever been, you know, as interesting as when Claremont wrote you know, the when she originally had her mohawk and like Life Death, which I think is one of the greatest X-Men stories of all time. What do you think about bringing back the mohawk, hashtag Mohawk Storm, and back into the present tense?
You're missing his salivations when he talks about Life Death, by the way.
Here's what I think. Here's what I hashtag think about hashtag Mohawk Storm. Actually, this is an idea that I came up with, and editor Niccolo was like, I love it, but, you know, Storm is going to be a tricky one for us because she's appearing in at least three other books on a regular basis, so, you know, maybe tricky. And I said, well, look, here's the argument. My argument is twofold. One is that when the Mohawk first appeared, it wasn't just like a fashion statement. It was like this external signifier of her internal trauma. You know, that was one of the most dramatic times in her life, and that's what the Mohawk was all about. So, I mean, flash forward to today, and Storm's going through a ton of turmoil. You know, she got unceremoniously dumped by the Black Panther. She's no longer a queen, no longer a wife. The future that she thought she had waiting for her is no longer there. She, you know, her mentor, her father figure, Professor Xavier, has been murdered, and has been murdered by one of her closest, most trusted best friends, Scott Summers. The home that she knew, the home that she pretty much grew up in, the Professor Xavier School, is gone, and what's there now is new and exciting, but it's also terrifying too. So, you know, this is, to me, one of the most traumatic and turmoil-filled phases of Storm's life. And the bringing back the Mohawk, you know, it's an indication of what she's going through as a character. The other part of my argument was that the Mohawk is just straight up badass.
Mm. Yep, definitely.
Hashtag badass, I think, is the official term.
Yes, hashtag, hashtag.
Another thing I really dig about the book, and it reminded me of the early Ultimate Universe with Ultimate X-Men, is that the costume designs really lend themselves to what you call them as hunters, and that they need to integrate themselves in daily life. And the costumes are such that, you know, they look like they could be real world clothing, and they could just kind of seamlessly move around.
Yeah, they, first of all, got to give credit to Chris Anka, who did all the costume designs and the initial character work, and also to Ron Garney, who I can now reveal is the true killer of Uncanny X-Force. He's doing an amazing job of drawing this book. He's killing it on every page. But the costumes, you know, I wanted them to be sleek and sexy. I wanted them to be new, you know, so we have a break from what's gone before. And I wanted it to be kind of like you said, like something that you could see. You know, the book takes place in downtown Los Angeles, something that you could conceivably see walking down the street in downtown Los Angeles. It's not that if you wear that, you're not going to get some looks,
right?
But you're also not going to get made fun of either.
Nobody makes fun of the mutants.
No,
nobody.
It's not done anymore. It's too dangerous.
Yep.
Let's switch gears. Let's talk some creator-owned stuff right now. Sacrifice number four. What is happening with Hector right now? He's kind of screwed a little bit.
Hector's in a tough place right now. You know, he's a modern day guy who accidentally got transported back into the past during the height of the Aztec Empire, and he's got to figure out how to survive in one of the most bloodthirsty civilizations that's ever existed. And he's in a position now because he is from the modern day where he knows what's going to happen to the Aztecs. He knows that the Spanish are coming, and that the result is not going to be pretty for the Aztecs. So he's at this crossroads where he has to decide what is he going to do about it? What is his responsibility in this situation? There is a genocide coming. What is he going to do? Does he have a responsibility to change history? Does he have a responsibility to preserve history? And how far is he going to do to do that?
Now, it's been a long time since we've seen an issue of Sacrifice. I have to ask, are you partying just too much now?
I wish the answer was yes, but the answer is no. I am working too much right now. Jesus. No, I did a count at the end of the year, and I'd written something like 800 pages of comics last year.
My God.
Wow.
The year before, I had written 80. So this year was it was stupid how much more work, you know, how much my workload increased this year. But, you know, Sacrifice, both for myself and artist Dalton Rose, Sacrifice was the first full issue series that we'd ever done. You know, my previous experience on the, was Our Love Is Real, which was just, it was a full issue, but it was just a one shot. So this is our first time doing a comic on a regular basis. And after the first three issues, the first three issues monthly, after that, we kind of needed a break. And then we came back to it. We knew, right, that we wanted to come back and do it monthly again. We didn't want a huge break and then do issue 4 and then another huge break and then issue 5 and so on and so forth. We wanted to do the last three issues monthly. So there's been, you know, it has been a long time, but during that silence, we've been working hard behind the scenes, getting ahead of ourselves so that we could ship the last three issues monthly. January, February, March, and then we're all done. We've got issue 5 is actually finished. It's in the can. And Dalton's about halfway through issue 6. So we are right on target. And it's a lot more fun this way. You know, it's a lot more fun to get it all at once and keep the momentum going. So I'm really excited.
In your free time, but it doesn't sound like you have any, what do you find yourself seeking out and reading?
Oh, boy. You know, two things occur to me. One is two on very different ends of the spectrum. One is Scott Snyder's and Greg Capullo's Batman, which I recently, because my to read pile is huge and I'm behind on everything, I just recently read, and boy, that is red hot. That book is crazy good.
It is.
That hype is legit. It is not overblown. So I got to give props to Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. And, you know, I mean, it's crazy because it really does have the potential to be a defining Batman run, if it isn't already. And it's really inspiring to see that them do that right on the heels of another really momentous Batman run of Grant Morrison's. And speaking as someone who followed Jonathan Hickman on Ultimates and Rick Remender on Uncanny X-Force, I got to give it up to those guys for pulling it off.
It's tough acts to follow.
Yeah, exactly. I know how it feels to be in that position. So good work, dudes. The other thing that I've been reading a lot is Simon Hanselman's Simon Hanselman's Meg, Mog, and Owl comics on his Tumblr.
Really?
Mog as in like Final Fantasy Mog?
I don't believe there's any relation to Final Fantasy, but I am not well versed in the Final Fantasy universe, so I don't know. This is a webcomic. This guy, Simon Hanselman, came out of nowhere. He's from New Zealand. He's been posting these comic strips on his Tumblr blog. You can find them at girlmountain.tumblr.com, and they are amazing. They're hilarious. They're like nothing else that I've read or I'm reading right now, but they're also weird and scary and gut-punchingly emotional at times. Is probably my favorite comic that I read in all of 2012.
That's
super psyched whenever he posts a new one.
The Tumblr comic community is so huge. I'd love to see a publisher experiment with like a big property and just put out panels or a different format just on Tumblr, like once a day or once a week, and then collect like the entirety for sale in some way. I feel like that community is so huge for that.
It is, but you know, it's a different vibe. I don't think you can just put something that could fit in the direct market up on Tumblr and find the same amount of success. Mm. You know, a good example of that is probably my second favorite comic of 2012, which is Jillian Tamaki's Super Magic Mutant Academy, which has mutant in the title. It takes place in a school. It features kids with superpowers, like. That could describe any number of books that have appeared in the direct market, but it has such a different vibe and such a different edge to it. It's really beautiful. It's really sweet. and sad and funny and moving. It's just extremely well done. But it's hard to imagine that book really being supported by retailers in the direct market. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think the converse is true as well. You just can't take even something I love as much as Scott Snyder's Batman and just post it on Tumblr and expect it to find the same amount of success.
Yeah,
it's a different audience, and different needs. That said, I'm not saying that Batman couldn't find success on Tumblr or DC couldn't do a successful Batman on Tumblr, but you would have to, you know, it'd be like Jillian Tamaki's Batman, which would be amazing.
Amazing.
You heard it here first. The update to Wednesday Comics, DC Tumblr.
That's right. Sam, I really enjoyed Uncanny X-Force. I hope everybody checks it out today, which is Wednesday, the day
we're recording. Yeah, it is today. It's Wednesday. Yeah, today's Wednesday. We're on the moon, too, by the way.
But thanks for coming on. I hope everyone checks it out.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.